You are listening to 97.3 LPFM, WRIR, and this is Open Source RVA. Today on Open Source RVA, we convene our panel of pundits, Charlie Deardorff, Paul Goldman, and Rand Burgess, to talk about Richmond's ongoing identity crisis. We also speak with Andrew Cawthorn of the RVA Playlist blog, which celebrates its third birthday next week. And we talk with local artist Thomas Van Auken about his latest show at Eric Schindler Gallery. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Brittany Tracy, and here's the news. Revelations about opaque economic special interests' influence in government have beset Governor Bob McDonnell's administration in recent weeks, and now the same light is being turned on the Virginia Department of Education by former Richmond School Board member Carol A. O. Wolf on her education blog. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Patricia Wright attended six international conferences between 2010 and 2011, specifically conferences in England, Portugal, Brazil, and the International Space Olympics in Russia. The travel expenses tallied at $22,350, and public records obtained by Wolf showed that these trips were funded by corporations that include Verizon, Cisco, Intel, Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, and Britannica. The list also includes the Pearson Foundation, a branch of Pearson PLC, the company that oversees the state's standards of learning tests. Virginia DOE spokesman Charles Pyle confirmed that Wright's attendance of these six international professional conferences was funded by corporate sponsors of the DOE, but denied any conflict of interest. In a surprise announcement on Wednesday, Mayor Dwight C. Jones reined in a bit his involvement in the city school system's finances. Jones disbanded his Schools Task Force, a blue ribbon committee comprising city corporate and political leaders charged last year with helping close a $24 million schools budget gap and with finding long-term solutions to some of the district's lingering financial inefficiencies. The commission, among its various recommendations, pushed for consolidation of a number of city and schools departments, like facilities maintenance. Last week, Open Source's Chris Stovey reported in his Richmond Magazine blog that the City Department of Public Utilities had fallen far behind in its upkeep of grounds at city schools. School board members Glenn Sturtevant and Kristen Larson both called into question the consolidation of grounds maintenance with the city, with Sturtevant suggesting possibly reviewing that decision in the near future. School Board Chairman Jeff M. Bourne wrote a letter to the mayor on Tuesday requesting that lawns be mown efficiently or else control of public school groundskeeping be returned to Richmond's public schools. Mayor Jones and his staff have requested a progress report from Public Works, and in the meantime, Wallace told the Times-Dispatch that the department will give primary attention to school facilities during normal working hours as well as overtime. Mayor Jones has promised school lawns would be mown by the end of today. The Virginia Republican Party is gearing up for November's gubernatorial, lieutenant gubernatorial, and attorney general races. Cameron Vigliano reports.
About 8,000 delegates gathered at the Coliseum Saturday for the Virginia Republican Party State Convention in order to select Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General nominees to represent their party in November's general election. Due to seven candidates running for the GOP Lieutenant Governor ticket, it took about 9 hours with four rounds of voting to finally choose Chesapeake-based Minister E.W. Jackson. Jackson, the only African-American candidate at the convention, also is a lawyer and former Marine. Supporters of Jackson, like Ella Dean, would say he is certainly one of the more charismatic figures present that day.
He's like a breath of fresh air. He seems to be able to energize the party.
And energizing he was. Jackson captured the crowd with this line from his speech delivered before the voting took place. E.W. Jackson is an outspoken opponent on hot-button social issues like contraceptives and abortion. and his campaign website says he wants to permanently defund Planned Parenthood. Jackson maintains an active presence on YouTube, where in a video with just under a million views, he compares Planned Parenthood to being worse than the Ku Klux Klan. The convention selected State Senator Mark Obenshain as its Attorney General nominee.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Obenshain is the son of Richard Obenshain, a legend of state Republican politics who died nearly 40 years ago in a plane crash shortly after launching a U.S. Senate bid. Current Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli officially accepted the party's nomination for governor. This has been a special report from RVA Open Source. I'm Cameron Vigliano.
Richmond's school board is wading back into its controversial effort to close some schools as a cost-saving measure. Cameron Vigliano reports.
Students of Clark Springs Elementary urged the Richmond City School Board Monday night to not close their school for the next coming school year.
And I would like to say that we really do have good teachers, students at Clark Springs, and when I heard about it, I would say that y'all close Clark Springs down.
Clark Springs is one of the three other schools due to close, but the only general education school, A.V. Norrell, a preschool program, and the Adult Career Development Center, which acts primarily as a GED program for about 150 at-risk students. Opponents to the closures, like former 5th District Councilman Marty Jewell, says the city has funds to provide the school district with more money and that the school board is being bamboozled and forced to make a selfish decision.
Look, I'm 67 years old. I was born in 45. I came up in Jim Crow. This plan is as racist. I call anybody here racist yet. But this plan is as racist as anything I could have seen in 1945.
The school board is to further talk about the school closures and rezoning at a public hearing at Thomas Jefferson High School on May 28th. For RVA Open Source, I'm Cameron Vigliano.
WRIR 97.3 and its Thursday early morning program, The Commonwealth of Notions, are sponsoring a free Memorial Day concert at the Camel. Expect an eclectic lineup of Richmond musicians, ambitious rockers Hero Sugar, Costello-inspired Paul Ivey and the Rubes, and synth soloist Alex French in Flossed in Paradise. For more information on the concert, which starts at 9 p.m. on Monday, May 27th, visit WRIR.org.
You can live your life in a crowded city. You can walk along the crowded street. But the city really ain't no bigger.
Can Richmond be the next Denver, or the next Austin, or the next Charlotte, or the next Charleston? Will we even be the next Ashland? Center of the universe already is taken, but we could perhaps vie for left of center. Or maybe we should look within for what or who we're meant to be. This past Monday, the Times-Dispatch held yet another of its public squares, the topic, how to attract young professionals, and what do we have that they ought to find attractive? Maybe, just maybe, we've already found our date to the prom. I'm here with Rand Burgess, owner of The Camel, our downstairs neighbor here at WRIR, and a young Broad Street entrepreneur, if ever there was one. Charlie Diridor, a developer whose creative reuse on Boulevard and efforts to maintain baseball on the same have helped define parts of this conversation. And Paul Goldman, a former advisor to Mayor L. Douglas Wilder, who arguably kicked off some of these more recent conversations about identity in Richmond that continue under Mayor Dwight Jones. Welcome, guys.
What's up?
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
So I guess where do we start? So this did any of you go to this Times-Dispatch forum?
No.
Had to work, no.
Busy being entrepreneurs, yeah. Right? The conversation, though, was an interesting thought. It's one that it goes on and on and on. How do we bring people to Richmond, or have we already done that?
We're doing it. They're coming, but they're not coming because of
sending people to Charlotte or Charleston or Denver or anywhere, Petersburg, for that matter. It's not because we're sending people elsewhere to get ideas and bring them back here. It's because young people, millennials and below, are actually coming here and coming up with great ideas that bring more of their generation to this city. Slaughterama is a great example of that. And business owners, and I'm really looking forward to what...
Slaughterama, by the way, being a kind of a bike festival that sort of verges on a joust, I guess.
Sure, sure. That kind of creativeness, that creativity of how do we bring people into town, how do we get our friends to come here, is what I love. It's not city council people and mayors and Chamber of Commerce people who are going to bring a 23-year-old to Richmond, Virginia.
Paul, you were advisor to Wilder during the beginning of his term here, and this was something that he saw as a priority, right? Was trying to reinvest people in Richmond.
That was one of the reasons we sort of pushed for the elected mayor, in order to have one person speaking for the whole community, elected by the community. And we did start working on that stuff. We put in a City of the Future plan to work on some of the infrastructure in the schools. You know, it seems to me that the history of Richmond is such. You go back to the 1870s, Richmond was a leader. A leader in the South and a leader in the country.
You're talking about things like trolleys.
Right.
And
at some point, of course,
invented it... invented the cigarette here.
Definitely something to remember. And we've sort of lost it a little bit.
Well, so Wilder saw an opportunity to turn some of this back towards earlier, I guess, successes? Or?
Well, I think the idea was that the government system that we had had failed. And that... Well, I mean, outside of the fact that in order to get a quorum of council, you had to hold it down in a city jail. And
oh, wow.
You know, otherwise than those kinds of things, because I'm joking, you know, you did that.
Are you?
Well, I mean, you didn't, not to get a quorum, but obviously to get them, you know, to... The bottom line is that the government had failed. It had failed the school system. School system was failing.
Still is.
And Richmond was operating, unfortunately, as I like to say, is the same plantation, different owners. And so the hope was is that you could bring more people, new people, more energy, and that would give you a new mindset outlook.
Now, I interviewed earlier this week local artist Thomas Van Auken, and we were talking about an earlier venture of his after the program, where he was a co-founder of Eggspace, which was one of the early efforts to kind of reinvest in Manchester. And this was him and Ed Trask and two other artists. And his point was that there was no other investment in that. It was just them. They were laughed at for it. In fact, they had a reviewer from Style came, and all she wrote about was how terrible the parking lot was, and didn't even mention the artwork. Van Auken was trying to say was that it had nothing to do with the city getting involved with, you know, Mayor Wilder was later after this Eggspace, but with efforts like what former Mayor Wilder was doing, didn't help this. And of course, you know, a couple of years later, really, you do see Manchester flourishing as sort of an arts community, and things are coming up there. You've got Plant Zero and other efforts going on along there. Rand, do you think really that we need to have something like an elected mayor to help bring about any sort of change like this?
I mean, I think an elected mayor is, you definitely want to have the power of the people with the people. I think that's a, you know, constitutional right. Specifically with mayor, I was a little disappointed that Jones went uncontested virtually this past election. That kind of doesn't really, nobody's really stepping up to take anything away from him, as opposed to like city council where we had, you know, several different candidates in almost every block except for Girardi or whatever, and
Grazia.
Four. And Graziano.
Graziano actually did have
a GR. But yeah, I mean, I think you should definitely have an elected mayor.
But is government important to what you do as an entrepreneur?
I think government getting out of the way as much as possible. You know, like the best case scenario in my experience working with the city, two different occasions. One, the parking situation we had right up front. And then two, the sidewalk permits.
Now, real quick, the parking situation was there are old signs out there that were meant to prevent cruising.
Correct.
And this was, last summer, wasn't it?
This past summer.
Yeah, this past summer. There was an issue where all of a sudden there was enforcement of these old signs that had gone unenforced for years and years and years. It essentially could have put a lot of businesses along abroad out of business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, the process of that was kind of disheartening a little bit because it's like from the day I got arrested from obstruction of justice to the day that the signs get taken down. I mean, it was almost 6 months, you know, so it's like, man, and we essentially, you would think all you would have to do is get the neighborhood association on board, the city council member on board, and then public works, whatever. And then the only people holding us back was the city of Richmond police, which, correct me if I'm wrong, they are not legislative branch. They are an enforcement branch.
Not policy making.
Yeah, they're not policy making, but yet here they are. We're a big deterrent. They're like, hey, we don't want this to happen. And everybody else was like, but we do. We live here. A fast forward to the sidewalk permit for cafe that the city of Richmond just put out. That was probably the easiest thing I've ever had to go through with the city of Richmond. It's literally went down there, filed the permit. 2.5-3 weeks later, I got my permit yesterday to put the thing out there. The surveyor's coming out tomorrow or by Monday to go out there and we can put out the sidewalk cafe permit. You know, like if we could get economic development and all these checks and balances like streamlined. It's unfortunate that the process prior, because I was going to apply for this same thing prior, was you have to go in and put a special use permit in. And in that special use process, it's $1,000 application fee. Well, you go through the whole process and city council denies you.
It's
non-refundable. Yeah, it's non-refundable. So here you have somebody saying yes or no, and you're basically donating $1,000. It's, you know, for a small business person like myself, I was like, man, I really want a patio, but
Is it worth it?
I mean,
do you want to gamble a grand on whether you're going to get a patio or not?
Yeah, right? On whether or not, you know, Charles Samuels and the rest of the council likes me today or not. You know, like, what's going on, you know?
But, you know, Chris, this is a microcosmic
and that's what I was
example
getting at,
what we really need to be talking about, and that is this. If, in fact, you want to bring people to Richmond, you want to bring young people to Richmond, you cannot continually box up these items of regularism, if you will, and say, here's some more regular stuff, here's some more regular stuff. You have to have the young people themselves saying, here's what's cool about Richmond. We have A, B, C, and it's not what A, B, and C is important to Dwight Jones or to the council or to the Economic Development Authority or to any other sub-organization to city council. It's what's cool to the 23-year-old, God forbid I should say this on air, hipster who, because hipsters ruin everything, right?
But it's
what's important to that 23-year-old and what is important to that person.
Presumably is going to be bringing their sweat equity and their knowledge.
And this will go back to Paul. What the government needs to do in order to foster that translation from, I like it, therefore I'm going to call my friends who live in Detroit and tell them I like it so they'll move here.
Is step out of the way.
Not step out of the way, fix the sidewalks when the sidewalks need fixing. Build a skate park because a skate park would be important to a 23-year-old or a 24-year-old or a 25-year-old. Build things that are important and create transportation, which we've talked about on this show I don't know how many times, that works for everyone, not just certain segments of society.
The public art as well. I think that's another critical component to that. You talk about investing in the creative class. What's the best example of a creative class is the talented artists that we have. I mean, we have First Fridays, which was basically built out of, the 20-somethings built that, and then the city's like, oh, we want to create an arts district, you know, like catching up to the fact. But why not investing in those public murals and whatnot, like the G40 project that we just did,
right?
And things of that nature, like create easier ways and boundary-less ways to, like, rather than these creative class coming in here and tagging graffiti somewhere and then we paying somebody to go over and do it, why not create murals all over the place that are, you know, beautiful and awesome and have just beautification of all the streets around
there. Not to play devil's advocate, but if you have that laissez-faire sort of approach to things from from the municipality standpoint, what incentive is there for the creative person or the artist or the musician to find workarounds, to think creatively?
I don't think that deters their creativity. I think if you create a opportunity for artists to obtain work versus waiting tables, and then they really just love painting, like, why not give them some type of
opportunity? But, Rand, we were talking before the show about Austin. Excuse me, about Austin. Austin is a place that you know, we go and see what they do in Austin to see if we can bring it back here so that we can be the center of the universe. And then we once there, you know, you realize that Austin is a place that itself, the municipality didn't necessarily embrace keeping Austin weird or letting Austin get weird. Austin got weird on its own, and then much later the municipality says, well, hey, you know, this is a brand that we're stuck with. I guess we'll roll with it.
And that, I'm glad you just brought that back up, because what that is we have to get, you know, no offense to the company sitting in the room, but get the gray hairs out of office and put some spring chickens in there. You know, like, we need somebody from, you say you want to attract 20-somethings.
Paul is showing very little gray down there.
Let's,
hey now.
If you want to attract the 20-something-year-olds, you have to think like them, you know? So why not, we don't have anybody right now that's up there in front of the people that are doing that. The reason that Austin was able to create that is because eventually those 20-somethings became 30-somethings, and those 30-somethings took over city council, took over their government, their local government, and embraced what they had already spent building. So why not have the Amanda Robinsons, you know, the Tony, the Tony Harris's in front of.
And we're talking here, this is Gallery 5.
Yeah, Gallery 5.
Magazine.
They can run. You know? They're over 21.
Nothing's stopping them.
Right, but that's another question,
Rand. Do they want to run, or do they want to just go about their lives and hope that the government stays the hell out of their way?
I don't think so. I think we're on the verge of awesomeness. I think we're already pretty much there, I think, with the branding of RVA. I mean, Richmond's where we live. Let me take that back. Richmond is a city. RVA is where we live. It's the culture that we live in. I think there's more things that go on right now in this city that has ever gone on. I think the biggest problem with that is the government getting in the way of that progress, trying to create an arts district. It's like, dude, we don't need an arts district, or you to tell us.
So, Paul, I want to ask Paul something here. Paul, we're talking here about young people asserting themselves and taking political ownership of the place that they are. Wouldn't that be kind of quick on the heels of another group that managed to assert itself and to take control of the political reins here in Richmond? And I'm talking here back to 1970s, when the African-American majority finally took over council, where we had African-American leadership assume the reins.
Well, I mean,
they're still fairly young and fresh in terms of their political lifespan. To have somebody else try to layer on top of that.
Well, you know, I would look at it this way. We had a big fight in this state, probably in the 70s and 80s, getting out of the segregation, selecting Wilder. I didn't see any 20-somethings there. I was there, a little older, but I didn't see him there. We had elected mayor, which was important to give people the right to vote. I didn't see any 20-somethings there. I would have been happy to turn it over to somebody else. I think, you know, I think it's nice, but, you know, I'm not sure that I agree with everything that I've heard here. I'm not saying maybe that's not the way to say it. I don't disagree with it. But, you know, 40% of the black community is living in poverty. I haven't heard any. They have a different view of somebody who wants to do free art or this and that. I think it's somewhat, you know, a leader's got to have a lot of things, you know, something that the whole city can pull together behind. I think what will happen to Richmond is this, okay? Washington is spreading down, and in 20, 30 years, you'll see a lot more people who invested up there, or Baltimore, all the way down the list, every 90-some-odd miles. Richmond will get its time. You'll see a whole bunch of folks investing in here. It's hard to come up with, even in a town of only 200,000 people, forget about a country of 360, 70 million. Sure. It's hard to find people who can lead it in a certain direction without an articulated vision, whether it's old hat and young people should take over. Could be. But whether they're the gray hairs or the young hairs, nobody's really come up with a compelling vision. Hairs. Right? Yeah.
We are very young when it comes to the idea of an elected mayor. And you made a very cogent argument in a piece you wrote earlier in the week about the fact that we really don't have a strong mayor. I think that was you that wrote that. I mean,
wasn't me.
Well, someone wrote that we don't have a strong mayor.
It was a good piece, Paul.
It was an excellent piece, and I'll take credit for it.
Great piece, Paul. The issue is this. We're very young when it comes to an elected mayor. Very young when it comes to an elected school board, in fact.
Well, it was 1994. So, remember, we used to have an elected mayor 60 years ago, and they got rid of it because it was a failed system. Then they changed back to it when the new system had failed.
Right. So, but here's the point. We're still only into the third term. We're still only a year into the third term of the elected mayor. Okay? So we can't judge whether it's good or not yet. But what we can say is that these two mayors that have come since the new charter, since the charter change, have been poles apart in how they go about their business. And I would make the argument that Jones is about furthering his political career, whereas Wilder was trying to fulfill his legacy.
Well,
other than the legacy he had as governor.
I mean, you don't want to get too much in the weeds on it, but you have to.
Why?
Because it's a topic for another day.
Because what you need to do with leadership is, you know, leadership is less about the details. You'll leave that to your aides. More about your ability to articulate a compelling vision and that get people behind it. And the question, of course, is it's difficult in Richmond, it has been, for a compelling vision in good measure due to the racial divide, which was very hard to overcome. The idea of the elected mayor was to have one person speak for the whole community, and so you'd get past that. I think that's been successful because I think people have wanted to do that. They want to get past those old divisions. But you still have the question of, you know, what is the vision? What do you want?
That's who we're here to talk about, the young entrepreneurs that are going to make the city great eventually.
That's what you're suggesting, that maybe they're going to make the city great. Why are they the only ones that make the city great?
Because right now they're the only ones making the city great.
I don't know if that's true. You got 200,000 people in the city. How many of them between 18 and 28? How many of them are entrepreneurs? There's a lot of big companies. There's a lot of small companies. They're not into art. They're into a lot of other things. I just think that it's easy to sort of get in your own little situation and see the world through a certain community and a certain this. But they're not touching, those folks aren't touching vast swaths of Richmond. We'll never affect vast swaths of Richmond. So I think you got to be really careful about where you say this or that is coming. I again say the job of leadership is to provide a vision where 200,000 people can feel some connection to move in the same direction. I don't think we have that in Richmond.
Yeah, I think Rand, and I want to ask at the end of this for everybody to kind of give their summary thoughts here, but Rand, I think, made that point earlier, is that maybe where we're finding our identity is in this fairly simple concept of RVA that can mean a lot of things for a lot of people, and it does.
Same thing with Austin. Austin is Keep Austin Weird. Richmond, we live in Richmond. RVA is our thing, you know? I think it's on the... I mean, the city's embracing it.
Frankly,
I mean,
no offense, Rand, but it means nothing.
It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't mean anything unless you believe it. I mean, how many of us have those RVA stickers on the back of our car or on the windows of our business or are painted on the sides of our trash trucks?
It's
on the back of every single city cop car. I think that everybody sees it and they identify, you know, like you said, Paul, it's like you can't make this one thing for everybody, but people see RVA how they see RVA, how it's important to them. And I think that is the unilateral message of leadership to convey. It's like, hey, this is RVA. What does RVA mean to you? And how can we make it mean something more? But there needs to be something for everybody here to identify themselves with RVA. Maybe it's, like you said, going out, drinking a beer, being a hipster, or whatever, riding your bike around town, which the mayor just did, and we're making big efforts into the bike community. Whether it's whitewater rafting down the James or kayaking, or you know, you like looking at birds, that you like bird watching at Pony Pasture. I mean, I think
or history, right?
Or whatever, or history. I think it could be anything. I think RVA can mean something different to different people. Along the lines of like the school, yeah, I agree completely that our schools need work. It's the problem is people keep saying that they're bad and they're failing and blah, blah, blah. They're going to continue to fail. They're going to continue to be bad until we get people moving back into the neighborhoods. We increase our population size, expand our demographic. I think that's the only way to get to make the schools better is we have to get more people in the city. You know, it can't just be black or white. It's got to be gray. We all got to be one people.
And with that, I want to ask each of you, what is RVA? One sentence. Rand?
RVA is awesome.
Charlie?
RVA is a state of mind.
Paul?
I don't have a sticker.
Perfect answer.
Nice.
And that's that. All right. And I've been with Paul Goldman. He is, of course, is a former advisor to Mayor L. Douglas Wilder, who helped to kind of start some of these conversations a while back. Charlie Diridor, he's a developer who's very creative in his reuse on the Boulevard. And heck, if anybody has sort of defined some of those conversations, especially around the Ball Diamond, it was him. And again, Rand Burgess, who took the bullet for a lot of us by getting arrested on Broad Street.
There were cops involved. No bullets.
Took the bullet by getting arrested on Broad Street to make his point about basically creative use and investment in the city. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you very much.
In a town with a thriving music scene like Richmond's, you need a map, a compass, someplace to keep up with all the freshest tracks, the latest shows, the changing lineups, and the interesting new faces. For 3 years, RVA Playlist has been one of those invaluable resources for keeping up with the local scene. The blog, found at rvaplaylist.com, is the creation of Andrew Cawthorn, who charts the Richmond soundscape with MP3 downloads, concert previews, videos, and the latest news on what's happening out there in the clubs and the local studios. The blog will celebrate a third birthday on May 29th, throwing a free concert at the Camel Nightclub that features three of the area's most entertaining acts, the bands Long Arms and Horsehead, and the singer-songwriter Anishe Khalili. Andrew is also the calendar editor at Style Weekly and recently penned Style's cover story on the wonders of the James River. He's with us today on Open Source RVA to talk about RVA Playlist and the current state of the local music scene. Andrew, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about this show coming up at the Camel. You have that coming up on May 29th. Now, you did this last year at the Camel.
Yes. Last year, we celebrated the blog's second birthday. It was actually the first show because the first year I did it, I didn't really expect to go that long.
Right.
And then people said, you should have a party.
Yeah.
So for year two, I got Against Grace, Dead Fame, and Marionette. And they played a crowded show at the Camel.
Yeah, I remember it was really well attended. Yeah. And it was a good lineup. How do you get the bands to do this? They perform gratis, or how does it work?
Usually, I've worked out a deal with the Camel where they get a percentage of the bar sales. So the more people show up and partake of the bar, the more the band gets paid.
Oh, that Rand Burgess.
He's a good guy.
He's good people. Let's talk about you a little bit. Where are you from, and what got you into charting Richmond's local music?
Well, I'm from Richmond originally. Mm-hmm. Went to Harrisonburg for school and then came back. And I've always been just a big music nut ever since I was little, mm-hmm. Listening to my dad's Beatles records and things like that.
Right.
And I didn't really start getting into the local scene until maybe around 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, I just ended up meeting a lot of musicians
right.
and discovering really good music around here.
Mm-hmm. What was the first local band that kind of sparked your attention, kind of sparked something off in your ears?
It was Marionette, actually.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
why I got them to play last year's show, because mm-hmm. they were one of the biggest bands that I interested in.
It seems to me that they're one of those bands that kind of goes under the radar around here.
They do.
I think they have better success outside Richmond than they do inside Richmond.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of bands like that?
I think it comes and goes depending on the band, but every band that I've seen do well, they've mm-hmm. done really well in Richmond,
mm-hmm.
and then they go out and they tour and
right.
what have you. And everyone's just like, oh, well, this amazing band came out of nowhere. And I'm like, no, they've been here for a number of years, and they've been amazing.
You just didn't know it.
Yeah.
How would you characterize the music scene here? It's best known for maybe hard rock or heavy metal, but it's actually quite diverse.
It really is. I mean, it's definitely known for its punk and metal scene mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. the old days. And that scene's still, kicking. But I don't know. It's just there's so many different genres. I mean,
right.
there's folk, there's punk, there's hip-hop, there's, everything.
A lot of jazz,
yeah. And it's hard to categorize it into just one
mm-hmm.
genre.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of encouraged by how the jazz and the rock players around here don't seem to mind playing together.
No, they don't.
In some scenes, that'd be kind of, there would be that yeah. this barrier.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of co-mingling of musicians, and a lot of the big projects that get off the ground are just mm-hmm. collaborations of all these different artists.
Right. Well, what determines a mention on the RVA playlist site? Is it your own personal tastes? I can tell that you don't put everything
on. No, there. And mainly because I don't have the time to put everything on.
Yeah.
I post usually once or twice a day if I can. But I usually go through Twitter, Facebook, email, mm-hmm. word of mouth. And if someone asks me to write a post on them, I'm more than happy to, because I yeah. love telling people about music.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not necessarily my thing, it may be someone else's thing.
Exactly.
And, just because I don't like it doesn't mean the rest of Richmond won't like it.
Do you have a sense of who follows the blog and maybe what your site stats are? Are they do you get people from outside looking at the Richmond music scene? How does it work?
A lot of times, yeah, but the majority of it is definitely from the Richmond scene itself.
Mm-hmm.
My stats vary from, 100 hits to 2,000 hits, depending on what I'm writing on.
Right, right.
Most recently, the vodka bottle incident mm-hmm. at the Toots concert
right.
was one of my biggest traffic getters this week.
You're referring to Toots Hibbert getting hit in the head with a bottle
yes.
at Dominion River Rock, right?
Yes.
I was going to ask you about this. How much of a setback for Richmond as a music town, it was that incident? How much negative publicity did we get from that?
I don't know. I think it's definitely some negative publicity, but it's definitely getting eyes on etiquette at concerts. And I've always been a proponent of better etiquette at concerts.
Absolutely.
And in the last post I wrote about it, I was like, stop getting completely wasted at shows.
Mm-hmm.
You're only
going
to
mm-hmm.
act like an idiot.
Yeah.
Be respectful of others. Other people are there to see an artist perform. The
yeah.
artist is up there to perform for those people.
Right.
And everyone acting like idiots is just making things worse.
Yeah, and I've sort of had a problem with some of the subtler problems that you get. This constant talking.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you even here if you're just here? I mean, go somewhere else and have social
right.
hour.
And I think that's definitely an issue that people are looking at. I mean, take the Listening Room series, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That whole thing was, these artists want to play for people who will listen to them.
Right.
And it's become one of my favorite series and probably one of the more popular ones in the area.
Right. And they're pretty strict about, hey, no talking.
Right.
We're just here to listen to the music. How do you walk that line, though, between seeming sort of like the Gestapo of silence and maintaining a well attended show?
I think it's it depends on where you are. If you're in a bar, you're going to have noise. It's just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there needs to be just a little level of respect for the artist playing.
Right.
But I think there needs to be the expectation that you're not going to have a silent show. Not everyone's going to listen to you. But,
sure.
you know, there's going to be at least a small crowd mm-hmm. or a hopefully huge crowd that will pay attention to you.
Right. And also knowing what show you're at. You know, the mm-hmm. the old, you know, the idea that you're going to be throwing bottles at a Toots and the Maytals show is kind of, you know, absurd. You
right.
know, is there anything in reggae music that is preaching, you know, violence and throw bottles
right.
at the crowd, you know, in the crowd? Do you think that Richmond is different than other communities in this? Or do you think this was just some joker that could have been in any city?
I feel like that could have happened at any show because someone's going to be completely wasted at a show and
Absolutely.
Act stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in this case, he ruined the show and actually hit him Toots in the face and
yeah.
ruined the show for everyone.
Right.
But there are plenty of concerts that I've been to and many more than I haven't that people are just throwing things on stage, being rude. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just happens and the show goes on.
Right, right. You can almost see it more at a punk rock show rather
right.
than where it was. Where are some of the places that people should, I mean, let's say you're totally new to the local music scene. Where should people go to hear good local music shows? And what are some of the cooler new acts that they should be following?
Well, two of my favorites are definitely The Camel and Strange Matter. I
mm-hmm.
feel like those two venues have a good grasp on what's good in the local scene. There's always something good at those places every night.
Strange Matter, the former Twisters.
Yes.
Yeah.
The former
Nancy
Reagan,
yeah.
the former Bagels Are, the Basil, whatever.
On and on and on. Right. They seem to be doing really well.
They are, yeah.
Shows.
I'm just impressed with the caliber of artists that they're able to get in there. Just
mm-hmm.
people who are just under the radar of breaking big.
Right. If I'm in a local band, I want to send you something for possible inclusion on RVA Playlist, where would I send it? What would I have to do?
You can email me, rvaplaylist@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, RVA Playlist. I'm will most likely run into you at a show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just hit me up. I'm more than happy to talk about anybody's music in Richmond.
Right. And beyond the May 29th show, anything going on that's new as far as the blog's concerned? You know, keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, keep doing what I'm doing. I've got a few other things down the road, a few other shows I'm planning, which I haven't really
mm-hmm.
planned
mm-hmm.
fully yet, but I'll be announcing those.
Excellent, excellent. So in other words, go to rvaplaylist.com and
yes.
stay tuned. I've been talking to Andrew Cawthorn, who charts the Richmond soundscape with the RVA Playlist. It's at rvaplaylist.com. There's going to be a third anniversary celebration on May 29th at the Camel. It's going to feature Long Arms and Horsehead with Anishe Khalili. For more information, just go to the blog, rvaplaylist.com. Hey, thanks for coming, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
WRIR is sponsored by Secco Wine Bar, open every day from noon to midnight. Secco offers artisanal wines by the glass, craft beers, and house-made snacks, sandwiches, and small plates. 2933 West Carey Street at the corner of North Shepherd and Careytown.
With Thomas Van Auken, he's a local well-known artist whose latest show of new work opened May 10th at the Eric Schindler Gallery, and I'm also with Kirsten Gray. She's the owner of Schindler Gallery, and that's, of course, in Churchill. Welcome, you guys.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Hello.
There we
How
go.
How are you?
This is it. Now put on your NPR voices, because that's where we are.
I don't have an NPR voice.
Hello. so the opening was May 10th.
May 10th.
And yeah, there you go. Perfect. Can you talk a little bit about what this latest this show is? This is a lot of it's a mix, right?
It is entirely a mix. It was sort of short notice when I got this show. So is it bad to say it's scattered? It's a little scattered.
It's not scattered.
No, I went over and looked at it today, and I
okay. Yeah. Then maybe someone else should talk about my work and stuff.
Oh no.
No. Well, I mean, it seems like you have maybe two running themes, and is really what I got out of it. You have, of course, these figures, which mm-hmm. you were telling me that your
yeah,
originally
a lot
what you were
of,
known
a
for.
Lot of figurative painting in the past, and then and really about I guess it's been about 7 years or so ago I started doing landscapes, specifically a lot of nighttime landscapes, but now some of them are in the day.
And in fact, that's what I think a lot of people around town know you more for, or at least I did, was these night landscapes.
Yeah, which is interesting to hear because the way that...
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit yeah. about that before
well,
we
get
going?
Well, I did a lot of figurative work, like I said, and I was... I'll Richmond name drop here real quick, but I ran into Paul DePasquale on the sidewalk, and he introduced me as his friend, and he introduced me as a figure painter, a figurative painter, and I bristled inside and thought, like, is that what I don't want to be pigeonholed like that. I'm a painter, you know, and I thought, well, it is what I've been doing. So I think for about a year, I just started painting landscapes, just really kind of a reaction to myself. You know,
was it a learning process for
oh,
you, or was
oh,
it
completely? A... Because, you know, when you, if you paint a thing, a figure, a person, or even a any you know, anything like a still life, you can get away with that because you can isolate that thing. You can sort of fake background, negative space. You can just kind of play around with that. But when you're painting a landscape, and you can still fake things, of course, you can make things up, use your imagination, whatever. But you are from the entire time, what you're really dealing with is composing a whole painting the whole time. You can't just paint a thing and then.
So in other words, a figure is somewhat isolated in the middle of the canvas.
Sure, like on the card there, and I know you know this is
nobody
this
can
is
see
good
this on the radio.
I think radio is really the. Anyone in art knows that the future of painting is in radio.
It is true. It is true.
But, you know,
so we're now going to talk about something nobody can see. Go
right.
On.
So in the card there, you know, the negative space there is pretty simple. It's a you know it's a figure just laying there on a couch, and it's a little bit ambiguous. You can't get away with that quite as well in nature. You know, when you go outside, you're just bombarded with information all around you, and you've got to pick and choose from that. And it's a challenge. It really was.
Now, what's interesting, and we were talking a little bit about this before the broadcast, is a lot of your landscape paintings, they have a particular quality to them. And I guess there are some well-known landscape painters around town. Ed Trask comes to mind, mm-hmm. who likes to do these sort of, I don't know, they're kind of monolithic kind of things. Yours, as we were talking about before, kind of have almost this noir feel to them, but it's like the noir of the mundane. So.
Mm-hmm. I think of that as more of a film term, and I can't even talk,
well,
speak intelligently about film at
it's,
all.
It's, this, it's these qualities of sort of, I guess, that, well, and this is not noir, but I mean, it's these qualities of light and dark that, you know, it's sort of what's in the shadow. You're not sure
mm-hmm.
what's there.
Right, okay.
But then there's a simplicity to what your topic tends to be. So,
yeah.
So the stuff I'm familiar with is gas stations or railroad tracks.
Yeah,
or,
I like regular, I like mundane things. I really, I feel
it's
like...
it's very Richmond at
yeah,
the same time. But.
Yeah, and I, you know, I feel like pastoral landscapes and even urban decay is... I'm not going to say it's
yours
done.
Is not
I mean,
decay. I don't see much
no,
decay.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not at all. Those are sort yeah. of two things. You know, I almost feel like urban decay is the new pastoral landscape.
Yeah, it is in Richmond.
In a certain
it
way,
is.
It kind of is, you know?
If you get enough graffiti on it.
Well, because it's the subject is just kind of leading you on sentimentally already,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yep.
It's so heavy. And so I'd rather go to these places. Well, here's where we actually go.
Mm-hmm.
Is
right.
We go to Valero, you know, or we go to the, you know, the, driving behind the gas station,
yeah.
behind the supermarket. And,
but it's like the where
well,
you start.
What happened is I moved out to a suburb.
Yeah, but.
And I started, you know, and you, I was like.
You paint what you've got.
You paint what you got. And so I started to think, well, there's the Valero I go to mm-hmm. every night. Why it? And, you know, I did this painting of a suburb and this little development that they're building down in Fulton Bottom, And I remember telling someone that that's where I was painting. They're like, oh, are you coming to Fulton Hill where all these cool old houses are? I'm like, no, I'm going to paint those new ones.
That are down the bottom. Paint what we have to.
And they're just like made this face. Like, why are you, why do you want to do that? But, yeah. You know, but I started thinking, like, so, you know, in probably in these houses, I'll bet these people have paintings of, like, the countryside in right. their houses. And so I was thinking, well, maybe someone lives out in the country. Could hang this painting of a suburb up in their farmhouse.
And so I've been with Thomas Van Auken and Kirsten Gray. Yeah. Thomas's latest show is at Eric Schindler Gallery right now, and it shows through when, Kirsten?
June 14th.
June 14th, so there's some time to go and see it.
And that's our show for May 24th, 2013. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-hosts are Chris Dovey and Scott Bass. The Richmond Public Media News Team is Brittany Tracy and Cameron Vigliano. Our producers are Gab Gab the Destroyer and Jay the Disappeared Western. Our guest engineer this week is Sean Lovelace, and our board op is the lovely and enigmatic Mannion. The password is Mike McKenzie. Psst. Hey, listener, want to hear some hot independent news radio? Check out the links to past podcasts at rvaopensource.com. The first one, it's free. No, wait, they're all free. And while you're there, click the donate button and help out some independent news radio people, why don't you? Remember, this Memorial Day, gas grills and fireworks do not mix. Have a safe and happy holiday, and we'll see you next week on Open Source RVA. Será feliz tu raco Eso te va a hacer tu a tu te gripe de a Ma vie douce me bien chanter des balades Mais ne t'y fie pas trop un bon conseil prend Tu crois bien sûr me connaître mieux que personne Marie-Colère est maintenant là devant toi Marie-Douceur n'est plus qu'un souvenir